Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to the Glove Podcast. I am your host, Gabriella Love. We are back again with another special combination episode. So this is going to be an intuitive slash psychedelic session, which is just so much fun. I enjoyed it the first time I did it, and I'm sure this time it's going to be great. And hopefully the first of many, many to come with an amazing guest, Kelte. Maybe she'll even sing for us. We don't know yet. But welcome to the podcast. Feel free to introduce yourself.
Hello, everybody. My name is Kelte Lin. I'm a musician and an artist that lives in London, Ontario. I love doing art that reflects my spirituality, whether that be music or my artwork. Like, everything just comes straight from the soul. And I am a lover of psychedelics. Plant medicine has changed my life and my outlook, and I'm profoundly grateful for all those changes and all the insights that I've gotten from my journeys and all the people that and synchronicities that have happened in my life because of those journeys. Just like how I met Gabriella, I met her at an ayahuasca ceremony. So just meeting people, like-minded people, and having those experiences have created a really huge impact in my life and shifted so many things. And yeah, that's who I am. I love art. I love music. I'm ready to talk.
All right. That's awesome. Thank you so much for that introduction. I love the whole, I love art. I love music. That's so beautiful. Have you always loved art and music since you were a wee child?
Yes. Those have been I guess the two foundations in my life that just have always kept me afloat has been my art and my music. When I was younger, I guess I was shy, a little bit awkward. So, and you know, I spent a lot of time by myself. So to fill up that time, I was always drawn to art and then just listening to music while I drew and yeah. Just got myself into the flow. It was like really, it is and always has been therapy for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really cool.
My attention, like when you focus on it, it's only you and that thing. It's only mm-hmm. you and your art or you and your music. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, I mean, I don't feel that way about art, but certainly with music, well, I guess it depends on what kind of art, but music is art as well. But with music, I just find that it's such a magical thing. Like, there's something about letting yourself just get lost in it and then completely losing yourself. And it often for me feels like when I let myself get lost in it, it feels like I disappear. It's like I just become part of everything, and everything that's happening in that moment is just like being guided by the sound or the melody. And like, it's like I disappear. Yeah. It's like I completely just go away. And all that's left is just this amazing, beautiful dance of just sound, which is so cool.
I really resonate with that. I have a story from when I was young. I guess it was my first, spiritual experience. Mm-hmm. Well, everything is spiritual, right? Like everything, you could say anything, or mm-hmm. I can even say anything is spiritual, but just one moment that really sticks out to me to connect it to what you were just saying about feeling like you're just like, it's something bigger than you. Mm-hmm. Sing in a traveling choir. Growing up, it was called the St. Mary's Children's Choir and also Festival Youth Singers. So like I was in that choir for like 11 years, and we would travel across the United States and Canada, and we did a lot of festivals and competitions and stuff. And it was something that I was really like, I just was in love with it because of the fact that it wasn't, you get together with a bunch of kids, and I mean, the lady, whoa, I'm a little bit nervous because it's like podcast.
But anyways, it's okay.
Her name was Mrs. Baldwin, and she was an amazing woman, very stern lady, lots of rules, but she really helped
us learn music. Like, she was just one of those music teachers, like, no BS, you're learning your music. Very strict and kind of hard on us, but I look back with a lot of fond memories about her, because she impacted my life very greatly with her knowledge and, like, her passion for music. And anyway, so my whole point of the story was, we did these every year we did these choir concerts for Christmas. And I remember singing, it was probably I can't even remember what we were saying. I think Joy to the World, and like, there, it was like mass choir, so all of the different sections of this, you know, St. Mary's Children's Choir and Festival Youth Singers, we would gather together and put on this huge concert. And I just love singing. I can hardly even describe like what it felt, but like, as a kid, just making such beautiful music, and our choir was really good, making such beautiful sounds with all these people, and just filling up this old church with just pure voice, like just beauty, just, I remember feeling, and I think I was maybe 10 years old, I had like a feeling, and now I know, oh, it was like my crown chakra, or like, I felt energy though come into the top of my head, and I started crying while I was singing, because I felt that it was my purpose, and my soul was like, this is your purpose, like, this is your purpose, and I felt like energy go, like, move into my body from the top of my head to the bottom, to my bottom, I guess, to the bottom of my feet, and I just felt so grounded and connected, and felt like this is what was why I was here, and just feeling connected to just everybody, every single person, all working in unison to like make those sounds and create that beauty for other people to appreciate, and just feeling the energy and like the healing. It was just like such a profound moment. I remember crying, and just like on stage, we're all just, it was just like a normal choir concert for Christmas, and I'm just meanwhile just like tears. But it's just one of those moments where you look back and you're like, holy crap, like that doesn't happen all the time, but you remember those things, right?
Yeah. That was such a beautiful story. Thank you for sharing.
No problem. I honestly hope that I didn't ramble too much. I'm trying to like be on my best behavior on this show right now.
I think you're doing excellent. Just be yourself. Okay. That's what we want, is yourself as you are. That's really beautiful. Yeah. I find there's something about, music that for me is just such a profound, profoundly spiritual experience. And I don't know why that is the case. I do think that it, like for me, for example, I went through years and years thinking that music was my purpose, or like that was the thing that I was here to do. That's like my soul's calling. And I now recognize that it's not the music itself that is my soul's calling or what I feel called to. It's that connection and that experience, that profound experience that it helps to facilitate. And that can be facilitated in other ways as well. Like it
you
can
mean
be
connecting with others?
What's you mean, that?
You mean connecting like the experience of like the connection with other people?
No, yeah, well, I mean, part of it is that, yes. But like if we look at the story that you just shared, right? And you had this beautiful experience of like your crown chakra opening and energy coming in and going to the bottom of your feet, like that experience. The music and the environment that you were in and everybody kind of doing it together helped to facilitate that. And I think that is like, I can get the same experience either dancing and letting myself go, or I don't know, like drawing for hours at a time and letting myself go.
You are an amazing dancer, just saying.
What's that?
You are an amazing dancer, just saying.
Thank you.
You are welcome.
So I think now I recognize that it's not the music itself necessarily that I feel called to, but the reason I'm especially inclined towards music is because it has such a powerful way of, for me, connecting me to something incredible and profound, which is a great reminder of like, that this is what I'm trying to connect to every day. And this is what I'm hoping to sort of reach when I'm connecting to other things, whether that's a tree or a person or something I'm reading or something I'm writing or this conversation.
Flow.
Yeah, exactly. Flow. And music is a great, great way of remembering that. And it's such an easy way to remember that. Like, it's so easy to connect with that.
Why, everyone's missing the bars, man. They all want to go out and, honestly, I feel people just want to go out and dance right now, dude.
Yeah.
Just to say, I feel like people are missing that communal, like, just dance. Well, obviously, I feel like I'm stating the obvious, but people want to dance. People want to dance in a room with other people. Everyone's sweating and stuff, and everyone's just letting loose. Like, yeah, there's not just one way. There literally isn't just, there's any way. Any way that you experience flow is your passion.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Exactly. It's so beautiful.
People, when they're canoeing, they feel connected and like that's what they're supposed to do when they're canoeing. And it's like, oh, this is why I'm here, because I love this thing that
exactly.
I'm doing.
Exactly. Or runners.
Yes. Oh, dude. I tried to run for a year straight and I mean, I was okay at it, but man, people, it must be so nice to just love running and for that to be a love.
Yeah, I think that too. But how does one try running and not manage? Like, what? How do you measure not being a runner versus trying?
I don't. You know what? I did it, and it's, you know, I'm not sure. Perhaps I was just not as passionate as some other people, or perhaps my body. See, this is an age old argument I used to get. Not even argument, a conversation I used to have with my friend. Just like, well, like. Are you just saying that they don't believe that you have to have a certain body type to be able to run? And I was like, well, some people's body types serve them better to be able to run, whereas some other people's body types may not enjoy running as much, but it doesn't mean that they can't get good at running. So I really am not sure, but I just didn't enjoy it. I wasn't going for running long distances and loving it. I'm not sure. It's a lot of work for me personally.
So maybe it's not that you weren't any good at it, maybe you just didn't enjoy it. It just wasn't for you.
Yeah, it just wasn't for me. I like lifting weights. What do you like to do, Gabriella? Do you like lifting weights?
No, I like dancing. I like dancing.
So you get your main workout going?
Yeah, pretty much. That or, you know, some VR games that require a lot of body movement. I don't know. I like the TRX, which is this thing that you like throw over a door and then you like, I guess, like do different exercises. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, is it kind of, it's like a, let me see. Actually, no, but it's like it's a device, right?
That you throw around. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You could put it on any door and then you have yourself a little gym.
Like tension thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of like weight, sort of.
Yeah, it kind of is. It kind of is. I'm more inclined towards like not using objects. Like the more I can minimize the use of objects in exercise, the happier I am. And if I do have to use objects, I'd rather do something like play squash, which is just fun and competitive and you're running around a lot. I get pretty bored just standing and doing the same thing.
Dude, I've never played squash before.
Squash is a lot of fun.
Because it like calms my brain. When I just have to do squats and I'm like, I know this routine, and you just push yourself, it's almost just like that going through the motions of it like brings me a lot of peace. And like getting it done, I'm like, okay, I got it done. Good job.
Mm-hmm. But did you feel that way when you first started?
When I first started, I liked it. It helped ground me. And I read somewhere that like doing squats helps your root chakra. And it's funny because like when I started doing squats, that's when I needed a lot of work on that area of my
self. I needed to work on grounding myself and getting more connected with my power and stuff. And yeah, squats really helped me. I like the routine aspect of it, because my brain and my whole, like, my art, my music, I'm all over the place, right? My life, like, and not in a bad way, just like I'm always daydreaming or thinking of or visualizing my next painting or thinking about my next song or daydreaming in general. And so to have a concrete routine that I do every single day that's like the same thing, it brings a lot of, like, in lots of aspects of my life, I like routine. I like the same thing to eat every day for breakfast type person, because then everything else is an adventure and a journey, but at least I have some things that are like the foundation for my day and life.
Yeah, I totally get that.
I've never played squash though, so that's freaking cool. I know people who play squash.
Squash is a lot of fun. Squash is a lot of fun. I highly recommend it. Highly recommended.
I will try one day.
Okay. The last time we spoke, you told me a bit about your iboga experience.
Oh, yeah.
How's that impacting your life now? Like, is that, are you still sort of processing things from that experience?
Oh, hell yeah. What it's done is basically just given me a glimpse, like connected me with my soul and my true essence. So ever since I've been back, so that was in October. Ever since I've been back, I've been honestly just integrating and making little shifts in my life, little and big shifts in my life to ensure that I'm on the right path. And you know what? It's been, honestly, Gabriella, it's been ups and downs. I'll say since I've been back. Cause like when you get connected with your soul, first of all, the whole process, like the 10 days, like you do two ceremonies over 10 days and each ceremony lasts like, well, iboga lasts for like 36 hours. So you trip in the night, trip all night for 8 hours. And then you go to your room for like 24 hours and you just process what you just went through, but you're also still in the ceremony. Cause you're like, it's basically like you're asleep, but not like you're totally awake. And you have visions of yourself and your life. I'm summing it up very, like, I'm almost not explaining it enough, I feel, because it's very intense. But ever since I've been back, you just, after you've seen how much power you actually have over your life, and how your choices, the way you talk, the way you speak, the people you surround yourself with, the things that you tell yourself in your head, like, you're aware of it now. And so now it's your responsibility, like it always was, to be in charge of your brain and to be in charge of your mind. And it feels, it's honestly, it's been turbulent in the sense that, you know, you take a couple steps forward and you're like, okay, I got this. I know my purpose. I know I was meant to do music. I know I was meant to do art. I don't need to rerun these old stories from my trauma and my childhood again. Like, I'm powerful, I'm strong, I got this. And then, you know, like real life sets in and you're at work and you're trying to shift things. Things are shifting, but then it's like the universe tests you and you basically have to be uber responsible and just, and it can just be frustrating. So I'm just being honest that there's been amazing shifts and amazing opportunities, but there's also that the transition phase can be sometimes frustrating, I feel, for myself personally. Because you're transitioning and you, it's almost like, and I've talked with my partner about this, it's almost like, you know, when you do something like ayahuasca or especially iboga, it's like you see the top of the mountain. You see, it's like freaking, I feel like Frodo freaking Baggins, and it's like, oh, I see the top of the mountain and I can get there. And then it's like the whole journey though to get there is what the actual work that you got to do. Right? So it's like, oh, this was what iboga, you know, it told me my purpose, or it confirmed what I already knew to be my purpose, but literally showed me my purpose, but it also showed me how I created my reality and my suffering. All the way up until that moment that I did iboga. And
that is so powerful. It's so powerful.
Because
you know, even something like bullying, like it showed me how, you know, I was bullied, but I chose that bullying because I had already decided that I deserved to be bullied. Mm. So then the universe created the scenarios where I would not only perceive it as bullying, but like then the bullying would just kind of snowball if you know what I'm saying.
But wait, hold on. Sorry. Can we unpack that for a second? Why did you decide? Why did you decide that then? Like why?
Because of like initial childhood trauma, things that happened, or that happened to me in my childhood, right? So, you know, getting rejected from someone in your family, getting bullied by, you know, people in my family. And then all of a sudden when you're that small and you don't have the space to process those feelings and what you went through, then, you know, it showed me how that translated into me going to school, me holding it. Like, Gabriella, I'm telling you, like, it even shows you how you hold yourself and how that holds you back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like, even when I was walking around after, like, the first ceremony, it was talking to me and saying, see how you hunch your shoulders over?
Mm-hmm.
That's not you. You don't hunch your shoulders. You don't have to hunch your shoulders. You don't have to make yourself small. You don't have to be scared of people. You don't have to hold yourself like people are already rejecting you. Mm-hmm. You can walk with your head held high. So what it was showing is that, you know, when I was younger, you know, I had these people, some people in my life who, you know, were my family and, you know, I was rejected by them. I didn't feel safe. And then that I carried that energy with me. Mm-hmm. I didn't deal with it. I avoided it, right? Like just like people avoid their feelings and we all do. And then it manifested itself because of my beliefs about myself, because that initial, I know it's crazy. That's not crazy, but it's sometimes it can be difficult to explain, and even difficult to understand because I didn't even fully understand this before, like it was shown to me. But, you know, I believed that the way that I was treated, it was never me, but I took that on as who I was and what I deserved, right? So I carried those beliefs into my, you know, childhood life at school. Mm-hmm. And then the way that I perceived myself was how other people perceived me too. And the way that I spoke to myself in my mind, it's like you create your reality by your thoughts and what your beliefs are. So if people believe, oh yeah, you can't just, I don't know, quit your job and go traveling forever, that you can't do that. I don't believe in that. Well, okay, well then that'll be for you. That'll be what happens in your life because you don't believe in it. Mm-hmm. But if you believe and you believe in yourself and you believe in your art and your music, then opportunities will present themselves to you because you are the universe. Mm-hmm. Like there is nothing different between you and the whole universe around you. Everything, the whole universe is inside you and it's reflected outside of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really beautiful. I have some thoughts, but go on.
Okay, no, just, well, what are your thoughts?
Well, no, finish your thought.
I was just saying whatever, and you know, this is stuff, like I'm not sitting here acting like I know the intricacies and the mystical magic mysteries of the universe. I'm just sharing what I learned, and I'm 27, like I learned this just, you know, in October, and it's been something like I always felt like, you know, whatever you believe, but like it wasn't until I actually like viscerally experienced that in that journey that I was like, whoa, like I did manifest a lot of things in my life, and when I could have treated people how to treat me and stood up for myself, and if I respected myself enough, because I was never respected, right? Because then I didn't respect myself. So then how could I teach people how to treat me, right? And that's when I say that it's been ups and downs. It's because since I've been back, I've had to redefine almost who I am, my boundaries, what I will accept, what I will not accept, what energies I will accept in my life, what energies I will not accept into my life. I will not play around with that stuff. I don't want certain energies in my life anymore, and then making those boundaries and sort of
distancing myself from certain people. It's been ups and downs because it's challenging the story that I carried about who I was.
Mm-hmm.
For 7 years. Oh, I can't do that. I'm a nice person. Well, who told you that? Mm-hmm. Like, who told you that you had to sacrifice your soul to be a quote unquote nice person? You don't have to do anything if you don't feel like doing it. If it feels wrong, don't do it. And I always, not always, but I'm a lot of the time to fit into the story that I had, or the world, or just me, that I had created for myself. Oh, I can't do that. I have to keep myself small so they like me, because if they don't like me, I'm a bad person, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
It's been an upheaval since I've gone back, because now I'm not going by that narrative anymore. And it's a lot of changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can imagine.
That's my thought.
Thank you. Thank you. I can imagine that being challenging. I do have thoughts, but I want to ask a question. So in this Iboga experience, did you go all the way back to like the moment of birth? Or like, I guess what I'm kind of wondering is, at what point do you feel you began to carry these stories or narratives around?
That's a really good question. Well, I mean, so should I just explain a little bit more in depth? I mean, yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, please do. I want to hear all about it.
Hell yeah! So the first ceremony, it's like a cleansing, a detoxing of your body and your mind,
mm-hmm.
and your spirit. So it basically, it's what it felt like. At first, like you're laying on the mat and you've done, you know, that you've had a couple spoonfuls of the medicine and you're laying on the mat and you have like the sleeping mask thingy on to cover your eyes. And then it felt like your soul, like it felt like I was jumping, but I was lying down on a mat and I was totally still, but it felt like I was jumping. And I'm pretty sure, don't quote me on this, I'm pretty sure that the shaman said that that's a thing, that it's mm-hmm. like it's like your soul jumping. It's like, yay, my soul.
Okay.
Yes, finally I get to be in control. And so that was interesting. I was like, oh snap, like I did this. Oh my god. And then it was interesting, it's okay, so there's really loud music playing and it's traditional Bwiti, like African,
mm-hmm.
and it's very repetitive, and they're blasting it, like big, big ass speakers, they're blasting it, and it's the music, it's actually incredible, because like these tribes people created this music, if I'm not mistaken, with the Iboga itself, like the Iboga and the people, like that consciousness of Iboga taught the people how, like what music needed to be mm-hmm. created, so that they could, like, so that the medicine could do its job properly. That's my understanding. Don't quote me if I'm wrong. I'm pretty sure that's what's up. And anyway, so your brain, it's like it defrags your brain. So you're sitting there and the music is like, I wish that we could play. Maybe I could play like a little bit and get it on my, oops. So you're sitting there, lying there, and you can't, it takes over your brain, and then all these thoughts and all these emotions are literally like just like going through your brain. And for me, like I had such a huge headache, and then it was the medicine showing me, like, you're in your head all the time, you're so good, you're disconnected from your heart, mm-hmm. you're constantly in your head. And it was like making me feel like what that was doing to me. Mm-hmm. And then somehow it like broke,
mm-hmm.
like he came and he like tapped my head, and then I think I took more medicine, and then it was just like, I just literally saw like so many, it's hard to describe, Gabriella, and I'm being super vulnerable, because some, you know, this kind of stuff you kind of want to keep to yourself most mm-hmm. times, but at the same time I feel like it needs to be talked about, because honestly, it's the most beautiful medicine ever. People need this medicine because it's incredible. Anyways, so I'll get back to the story. So because the music is so disjointed and it's like the rhythm is so crazy,
mm-hmm.
it makes your, it, you don't remember. So all these memories are coming up, right? But it doesn't let you go into them to analyze them. So usually you think of a thought and you're like, oh, sandwiches, man, I love sandwiches, man, roast beef, na-na-na-na. Oh, remember that one time that Becky bought me a sandwich? No, like, it's just like sandwiches and then it's gone and it takes it out of your brain. And it's cool. Like, no, we don't need that in your brain. Check you later. And it's like I was seeing like snippets of my life and like things that I wouldn't even, just things that it's like, wow. And then it shows you it, you feel the feeling, and then it literally ripped it out of my body. And I saw it happening.
Mm.
And it wasn't like a thing came down. Some people had like, oh, they were dancing with entities. Like my one friend was like, I was just dancing with 1,000 entities. Holy shit. For me, it was, it's so interesting to me, just a side note, how everyone experiences psychedelics differently. I mm-hmm. love that. It's crazy.
It totally is, yeah.
But yeah, like it went into my brain and it showed me like a part where like somebody in my life very close to me like had hurt my heart, like, and my heart had been like, because anyway, before you even go to take a boga, you have to do an EKG
mm-hmm.
or an ECG, like a electrocardiogram thingy to make mm-hmm. sure that your heart's like good to go, and because there can be some complications with the heart when taking the medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to take it, it said that I had a right bundle branch block.
Mm.
And so I'm pretty sure that's like part of your heart. It won't, the electricity's not moving through it properly. And when I sent him, before I even went to the ceremony, when I sent the shaman, like the actual, you know, medical thing
right.
that I got, he was like, oh yeah, like you're fine. Like we can help heal that too. And then it got me thinking about it. I was like, wait, like, that's crazy. Like, what's up with my heart? Like, why isn't that part of my heart? And before I went to go to a boga, I had pains in my heart, like literally.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, dude. And then so when I went into the first ceremony, it showed me this part of my heart that had I had been carrying a literal wound in like my physical heart from this person. And mm-hmm. it outlined that part of my heart. Like I saw in my brain this, it was just like outlining my body where my heart was, and then it was in red, like what was outlined was in red, and it was like that's a wound, and then it just like ripped it out of me and it was gone. And it's like, wow. No, that's good, because it was, because it's like showing you, okay, see, so that's where you carry like a physical manifestation of this emotional wound from your past, gone. Mm-hmm. So what was the initial question, because this is leading to something.
I'm just so speechless. I'm really grateful that you're sharing this. I truly, truly am. Thank you.
No problem.
I think the initial question was something along the lines of like at what point did you, during this experience, do you think you began to take on those stories?
Well, throughout the entire process, we're being reminded by, you know, Michael, he's the shaman that I went to, and honestly couldn't recommend him highly enough. Like, he's an amazing person, amazing man, and he's so full of insights, and, you know, I respect him so much, and I just, if anyone wants to partake in the medicine and work on themselves in this way, then I would go with him. He's very, very, takes it very seriously. Anyways, so in what point, so the whole time, oh, are you still there?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, good. Okay, my phone just did something weird. All right, so the whole time that you're in this center where they do the medicine,
mm-hmm.
it's you're faced with, okay, everyone who was there, I think there was like, what, 10 to 15. I can't remember exactly how many people were there, 10 to 15 people, but they're all mirrors of you. Like from the moment that I walked into the center and met the other participants in this 10-day retreat, I was like blown away by how amazing everybody that I met was, how like-minded they all were, it truly felt like I had been, like, this was meant to be. Like, not mm-hmm. even just saying that. Not even just saying that it's, like, doing this medicine has honestly blown me away, because when I met all these people, they reminded me of, you know, people in my past, people in my family, people who hurt me, people or parts of myself that I'm not accepting, or parts of other people that I haven't accepted yet, and showing and triggering, everyone's triggering each other, and everyone looked like, and even just like, even anything that anyone says, you stumble into a conversation in a moment where you were meant to hear what they were saying, because it applies to you and your life and your problems. Mm-hmm. Or you say something and then that triggers somebody else. And then even like the Iboga, when it's in your system, like after the first ceremony or whatever, when you're doing in between, you know, the two ceremonies, when you're just like doing other stuff, you feel the Iboga in you telling you, okay, see, that's like with your mom. This is how your mom treats you. Mm-hmm. Do you like that? Do you like it? Why do you let other people who aren't your mom treat you like, or why do you even let your mom treat you? Or why do you let your dad, like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like that. It's, and my mom's awesome. I love her. And, you know, like, I've healed like a lot of my relationships. It's just for an example, you know, anything, your best friend, like these people reminded everyone there, not just me, of like people in their lives or aspects of themselves. So in that way, the story or your story is always in your face, because your story, people carry their story with them, right? Like all the time. So
yeah.
Like, you know, the victim story, like, oh, I'm always the one, blah, blah, blah. That's just a story in my head that I had. That's not even true. And I'm trying to explain. And then in the second ceremony, it was just showing me literally from the moment of my birth until
now.
Now, literally, just all the ways that my initial traumas impacted my perceptions of people, my choices of how to conduct myself and how to let others treat me. It just showed me how I had chosen that by allowing that to define me and to be my reality, and how I had control over my life by honing my thoughts onto what I want for myself, and not allowing myself to be negative, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we can all do that, right? And like I, you know, and that's why when I say it's been a roller coaster, because now I'm. Because after the afterglow, like for a month or a month and a half, I was, oh, I got this. It's all good. But then your mind starts, your ego starts to come back and be like, hey, bitch, I'm back. And you're like, okay, like, gonna deal with this. And sometimes it's not always easy. Mm-hmm. But even that's just a thought, right? What if I said, oh, no, it's easy. It's all good. We're good. I got this.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that's what I'm saying, the ways that we talk about ourselves, our stories, that like the story of like who you thought you were because other people thought you were that way and other people treated you that way.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of like what the way I look at like what a story is, like that's a story, right?
Mm-hmm. There's something that you said there that really stuck out to me. It was something along the lines of you chose to allow the something to define yourself, like you chose the defining yourself as something based on something that happened.
Yeah, based on things that happened, mm-hmm. traumatic events.
And that's such a beautiful distinction to make, because I think definitely for me, for many parts of my life, I struggled to understand why I would have chosen to have specific experiences in life. And, you know, at one point in my life, I told myself the story that, you know, I chose those experiences because they gave me the opportunity to learn specific lessons and to
100%.
Yeah. But that's one way of kind of approaching it. But the other way is also just being confused by, like, why would I choose certain experiences that aren't necessarily pleasant and they're traumatic? Like, why would I choose them? And you saying that, it's such a beautiful, like, it sheds a light on this beautiful distinction that it's not that we necessarily choose the events or circumstances. What we do choose is how we let that define us. And then
we
take that self-identification and move along with it for the rest of our lives or however long. That's where our choice happens. It doesn't happen in the context necessarily. I mean, I don't know, but I'm guessing it doesn't necessarily happen in the context of what somebody else does. It happens in the context of how we let that define ourselves.
Exactly. And so say, for example, like, so I went into, you know, school feeling rejected by people in my life, feeling verbally, physically abused by people in my life, feeling, you know, all those things that come with that. And then you go into an environment where there are kids and just other beings, other people, and, you know, being oversensitive, taking things to heart, and then it kind of snowballs and then creates more opportunities to be bullied because you feel it's how you carry yourself and what you believe about yourself. And you know what? I think just like everything in this universe, it's like there's, I guess, a yin and a yang. It's not one way is the right way and the other way. It's when I say that, I don't think that we choose everything that happens to us, right? Mm-hmm. So like when you have something that happens in your life like that, that experience, we don't choose what happens to us, but we choose exactly like what you said, how we process it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have to let it go, because if we carry that as something that defines who we are, then that will define our experiences, how we see them, how we perceive things that could be like completely benign or whatever, but then we perceive it in the lens of our trauma.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that I did for years, and I didn't even know what I was doing that. Mm-hmm. But I was. And then, you know, so I don't think that we choose, like, it's not like, I just think what I mean is like that initial trauma that like morphed into story after story after story.
Yeah. So then like, why do we do it to begin with? Like, why does it happen in the first place? Like, is that just the nature? And this is like, you know, based on your experience or your experience with Iboga or outside of it. Like, is that just the nature of being a human being? Like, as soon as we become a baby, a human baby, we're already set up for this like processing of things, and we just don't know any better. So we just start processing in that way until we figure out that, hey, there's a better way of dealing with things.
Yeah, like I think that a lot of people get to that point in different ways in their life. Like, for example, my partner, you know, he used to drink a lot, and it was a big part of his life. And then he got three or four years ago, he got type 1 diabetes, and it was like a virus, right? It was something that went off in his body, and it was just like, it was like a dormant thing and then all of a sudden his pancreas didn't work. So they basically told him, you have to quit alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, and you know, I didn't know him at this time, but from what he like said to me, it's like, he literally went through his own awakening process because of that.
Mm.
And he had to change his entire life. And literally he used to be an alcoholic and he doesn't drink at all anymore, and he didn't have to, you know, go and do ayahuasca in Peru or go and do Iboga to even understand, you know what, like he said that he literally just went inside of himself and was like, okay, we can't drink anymore, dude, what's going on here? And it sounds kind of funny, but it's like he literally, that was his awakening. He's the most spiritual person that I know. He loves mushrooms. He doesn't want to do ayahuasca. He doesn't want to do Iboga. But
what I'm trying to say is like he came to that point where he was just like, dude, like why did I even feel like I needed that?
Mm-hmm.
What was I covering up? What's going on? And so he was forced to face himself and to work out his stuff. And he's, yeah, one of the most amazing people that I've ever met. And he's just so kind, so in tune. He doesn't like drama. He doesn't like negativity. He just does his own thing. And, you know, mm-hmm. I have a lot to learn from him. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I feel like, you know, that's just an example of like, okay, they got to the point in their life, in his life, where he was like, I can't do this anymore. I can't keep on doing the same patterns that I was always doing. And you know, it took him having to give up alcohol to get to that point. Right. Mm. So, and for me, it took me a lot of psychedelics to understand that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's important to note also that a lot of this stuff, like what we call awakening, like I think in my opinion, awakenings, there are like multiple of them that can happen throughout.
Yeah, he's not like, yeah, I'm life. Not saying he's like Buddha, like on
oh,
top
yeah,
of
yeah, yeah, yeah. No, totally. But
that, yeah.
But the reason I'm saying that is more to say that, you know, the like throughout our life and our journey, while we're alive, the work is like, we're never really going to reach a place where, you know, it's done. All the work is done.
Yeah,
it's going to keep going. It's just going to be different work each time. And whatever the work is now, that's just what the work is now. And, you know, in a year, it'll be different work, but it'll still be work in some ways.
Dude, it's all changing. It's always changing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, hey, this is my lesson for right now. All right, let's hunker down. Let's do this.
Yeah. So here, I just remembered the thought that I wanted to bring up earlier.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I don't want to forget it. So now it's kind of like a, I don't know how to explain this. It's like this. It's like the thought is literally a cloud that's floating by, and I'm trying to grab it and hold on
do
to
it.
Before
grab it.
It goes
grab
away.
That cloud. Bring it down here.
So the thought, it was something about what you were saying, people, life.
Oh, was it the one where you already said it, where it's like people will treat you how they treat you, but.
No. It was, give me a sec. I'll take a second to try and grab this cloud here. Maybe it'll come back to me if I just start talking about what I think will lead
like
to it.
Where they're at in their lives? Was it about like where people are at in their lives and like when they decide to awaken and we all awaken at different times? Like,
No. It was well before that when you were speaking earlier, and I had something in mind. But basically, so basically I was thinking about, and this is not the thought, but this is a thought that's related to that thought. it's a sister cloud. So I was thinking about like why, like a lot of the stuff seems almost like self-evident. A lot of the, you know, like what we believe about ourselves limits us. What we believe about others limits our like relating to others or whatever. Our experience of life is basically influenced by what we hold as beliefs and memories and what we store and carry in our bodies. Yeah. And so like we know that that's the case. Or at least for some of us, we know that that's the case. And yet somehow it's still a challenge to actually like live by that. It's still a challenge. Oh, here's the thought. Okay. See, I knew that would help. So the other thought has come back. Okay. So I was thinking about, okay, so this is something that I've been kind of, struggling is not the right word, but this is something I've been
mulling over lately.
So there's the part of me that's like, yes, you know, I can do anything and I can express my soul fully and be a wild woman and it's just all going to be beautiful and awesome and also, you know, hard work and all that stuff. all of that said, there's this part of me that carries, and I don't know if this is a story or if this is rooted in reality, but there's a part of me that thinks, yeah, there's all of that. I can do all of that. But there's also like the nature or just nature of everything around me, like the nature of the planet, the nature of the oceans, the nature of the ecosystems, the nature of other people, like all of that has its own course and has its own like seed, you know, growth, bloom, phases and stages and whatever.
Yeah.
And no matter what, it feels to me that no matter what I do or think about doing or think I want and you know, try, like intend to have happen, it's like the only things that are actually going to happen are the things that like everything else around me or the entire planet is like in agreement with. Like it like if I, for example, say want I don't know, like it, say I want like a red car. I want a red Lamborghini. And which I don't, but I want a red Lamborghini. and like me getting this Lamborghini, it feels to me like I can intend all I want for that. And I can do all I could possibly come up with to have that red Lamborghini. But there's a part of me that questions whether or not having that red Lamborghini is actually in alignment and in harmony with everything else in life. Like it does me having a red Lamborghini, is that in, like, would that actually work in conjunction with everything else, all like the ecosystems around me? And if there's,
what if the red Lamborghini was like a green, natural, like totally nice for the environment Lamborghini?
Right, exactly. Well, what I'm saying, so there are different, like, you know, for it, it could be good or not. It could connect or disconnect for many different.
I get what you're saying.
Yeah,
I totally get what you're saying.
Okay, though. So then I'm sort of like in this position of, you know, I can want all these things and go for all these things, but if nature itself doesn't agree. And I'm like, what I think I want isn't actually what's best for me in the context of, you know, nature. Then no matter what I do, that thing isn't going to happen because I have a deeper intention of being in alignment with nature. So then like the disconnect is like what I think I want and what is best for me. And that disconnect is something that I've been mulling over, and I find it very confusing because in some ways, and now mind you, like recently
I've been thinking about this too. Just
have you
just to throw that out there? Yeah, and okay, hey, I don't know what you think about Teal Swan. I don't even know what I just watched one of her videos.
Mm-hmm.
Not get into any of that other controversy. I don't really care. She has nice videos sometimes.
Yeah,
she says some really cool things. So basically, she was talking about like your deepest intention or like your commitment, what your truest, or I can't remember what it was called. It was something about commitment, but your like highest commitment. Mm-hmm. So some people can be like super in, like some people can say, oh, I've committed to this or this is what I really want in my life. But deep down inside, they're actually super committed to just freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Like I do want to get married and I do want to have a partner, but deep down inside they're committed to freedom.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, just, totally.
I'm just bringing that up because it kind of reminded me of like, so you were saying you're committed to just being one and with nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? Totally. And totally.
What kept on coming up to me when you were saying that, like what I'm getting, what I'm hearing is like, so you were saying, oh, wait, what was it? Brain freeze. So you're talking about
there's a disconnect like between
if you're meant to have something, this is the thing. And this is the thing that came to me in Iboga, and like I believe this. I just feel like if it's your destiny to have something, then, you know, it's your destiny. And sometimes I feel like maybe our egos want things that are just what we think will make us happy or what will make our egos happy.
but really, like, happiness starts inside. And that sounds so, happiness starts inside. It's like a freaking Hallmark card. But it, like, you, for example, like, I want a big art business where people are buying my art all the time. And I want, you know, my band to be successful and for people to, like, listen to our music and to tour and stuff. And I have faith that that's going to happen one day. But does that mean that I can't be happy right now? That's what I've been, it's kind of the same thing. It's like, okay, you want all these things, but you have so many good things right now. Mm-hmm. Like, and I have to learn how to be happy. Like, I used to think, oh, if I have this, once I have this, or I've achieved that goal, or once I've painted that painting, or I've gotten this song out, then I'll be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, no, dude, happiness is looking at things and being like, frick, I'm grateful for my boyfriend and how he makes me feel when I look into his eyes, and he, you know, he makes me breakfast and stuff without asking, and that's really, really sweet. And just sitting together on the couch is, like, really nice, and just being able to paint in my apartment by myself, whereas when I was younger, like, I felt like I was devoting time to other things all the time, and I never had that privacy or the time to just, like, literally do whatever I wanted with my canvas. Then it's like, now I have that, and I'm like, man, I've got to appreciate, first of all, I've gotten two things in the last week that, like, I feel like when I've been connected, it's been hammered into me, like, that something in some, maybe my spirit guides or my higher self is, like, trying to get me to understand gratefulness in the moment and for the moment, and freaking patience. Patience, because it's like, what is, like, it's patience. So I've seen the top of the mountain in Iboga. I've seen what I can be. I've seen the strong person that I am, the creative person, the dynamic person that I truly am. And in order to fully embody that, it's going to take gratitude for all that I've come now, and all that I have to be able to go on this path. And also patience to allow the universe to give you what you need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, like, the willingness to, like, to wait. And, you know, like, if you want something, that's all that matters. Like, if you want a red Lamborghini, then, mate, like, who's to say that the world won't create a really, you know, if you want to be in flow with nature.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you mean? Is it, like,
yeah, no, it's not, it's,
if nature wants you to have a car or not.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. It's not so much like, literally, you know, how it impacts the environment, although that I think that also is part of it, I'm sure, on some level. It's more figuratively, but just to add to that, so recently what's kind of been changing for me,
go ahead, please tell.
Yeah. So what you brought up, this video that you talked about from Teal Swan, actually resonates with me, because I am aware intuitively that I have deeper commitments and deeper intentions. And these, a lot of the sort of things that I think I want or have at various, like, stages of my life thought I wanted or declared that I wanted them, they come from these, like, surface level intentions and commitments. And often for me, this is my experience, often those things, the reason there's a disconnect is because they're not really in alignment with what, like, my deeper commitments are or my deeper intentions are. They're not, like, they're not natural goals that are produced by those deeper intentions or commitments. Yeah. Rather, they're these sort of artificially placed things. From those stories, the programming, the stories that I carry, like the trauma, whatever.
Yeah.
Ideas that, you know, like, for example, I have to have, like, this much, whatever, money, or this much, like, this many investments, or, like, I have to, like, achieve these things. But I know and recognize completely and fully, and this is the irony, I recognize that those are not things I actually want, but I it's almost like I make myself want them because I think I have to. And, like, What I'm sort of opening up to more and more recently is that it takes tremendous courage. It's almost like my soul or I am calling for tremendous courage to actually stand for the things that are reflections of my deeper commitments and the deeper intentions, regardless of what that looks like to anybody else, regardless of whether or not that like matches some idea of what success, a successful, happy life looks like, you know, if I'm
just one quick thing, the mm-hmm. best quote ever that is going exactly with what you're saying. I think he's some MMA guy, or I think it's my boyfriend's into MMA, but this guy, he used to be overweight, I think, or he might be a personal trainer now, but his quote is, fuck people, be a savage.
Mm.
Fuck people. Who the fuck cares? Be kind, yes. Not saying the whole world can go up in flames. I'm saying you are responsible for you mm-hmm. and you're what you love. And it doesn't matter what anyone else thinks. That was a big takeaway from my ceremony too, is just I have to be able to look myself in the mirror every day and be like, you know what? I protected myself. I wasn't anyone's doormat. I love myself. And if they don't understand that, or their ego gets triggered from my decision to protect myself or to love myself, love isn't always, oh, giving. I used to think love was like giving my time, blah, blah, blah. No, mm-hmm. it's sometimes it's not talking to that person, and it's not, sometimes it's not selfish. See, we're programmed to feel like that is selfish. No, it's not. Do what you want. That's what, when I, going back, not to go back to the Lamborghini, but it's like, if you want something, then go for it. But tune into your soul and be like, do I really want this?
Mm-hmm.
What do you want?
Yeah.
What's up? Right? Yeah. I totally get it.
Yeah.
And it's like, dude, we all do those things. Even myself, like I'm, you know, working a full-time job right now. I'm wanting to get my art business to the point where like I can have that as like a steady income one day. Mm-hmm. And that's going to take time and patience, right? But sometimes even then, like I'm going to go part-time at some point, and I'm like, okay, I'll save up this much money and then I'll go part-time. And then a part of me is like, why don't I just do it? Because mm-hmm. if I believe in it, like, but then it's like, see, we're programmed to fear.
Mm-hmm.
But what I kept on getting from the people at this retreat, from the people who have been working with the medicine a lot, it's like, no, if you believe in something, then the universe will, and then something is meant for you, and it's your path, and it's your passion, and you love something so much, and you want, that's what you want to do with your job, that's how you want to create your income, and you make the opportunities for yourself to make space in your life to do that thing, then the universe will open up and present those opportunities to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So for me, that's another one of those hurdles that I've been going through the last few months, is like literally just trusting my gut. And any time that I haven't trusted my intuition, there you go. Never works out good.
Yep.
Because I should listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
And now I know it now, because that was one of my big intentions, is like, what is my intuition?
Mm-hmm.
And like, how do I listen to it?
Yeah.
Well, it's there. The first thing. Do I really want to go hang out with these? Nope. Okay, I guess I'm not. But your ego is like, oh, come on. You wanted to go out tonight. You were going to go have fun and smoke weed with these people. It was going to be awesome. And oh, and then the story comes in. The nice little story. Okay, well, if you don't go out, no one's going to like you. You know that, right? They're all going to think you're this or you're that. So you better go out. If you're a good person, a good friend would go out.
Mm-hmm.
But your intuition said no right away.
Yeah.
And that's what everyone's doing. They're not everyone. Ugh, not everyone. That's what lots of people do.
Many of us. Many of us,
myself included. But like some people more than others.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like some people might not even know it's there sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't blame them, right? Because people are caught in their trauma, caught in the system, or they're just not used to mm-hmm. feeling that.
What came up for me while you were talking was like it discernment and courage are the two sort of pillars that are very, very helpful in life. Like discernment of what we actually want and what's important to us and what that looks like, and the courage to reach for that, the courage to do just that. And I think my life shows me that pretty clearly. Like I have not been listening to my intuition. When I say not listening to my intuition, what I mean is I hear my intuition with regards to specific things like currently in my life. And I've just kind of been refusing to do it, refusing to follow through. And that's because of like the courage pillar. I have not been, like, up until this conversation, thank you very much, I have not been willing to be courageous enough to actually follow through on what my gut, my intuition tells me. And that's because, like, one of the things you said was that, quote, fuck people, be savage, which is completely, like, I completely agree with that. And I think it's important, like, for me, what's been helpful is in discerning what it is that I want with regards to my relating to people, or like my connection with people. It's not that I want to conform to things in order to be accepted and approved of and loved and connect, etc. It's what I actually want is just a sense of connection and belonging and you know,
peace.
And there's that disconnect that happens is in not discerning that the things that we want, when we go for the things that actually feel true to who we are and true for our soul, I think we tend to think that those things will somehow make people not love us. Or it'll somehow make people not interested or not approve of it. And so we try and modify that thing that we want or we think we want or who we are in order to get that result of being loved and a sense of approval and a sense of connection.
Yeah, like changing yourself to be a people pleaser.
When
hashtag trauma response.
Exactly.
I can't be myself because I have to fucking, that's a story, definitely,
100%. Exactly. But the truth is, when we're brave enough to align ourselves with who we are and discern what we want and who we are, align with that, the people that are able to, are in a place to hold space for that and love and accept and cherish us and celebrate us, they will still be there. They are not going anywhere. And more of them will come. But I think like for me, that's been kind of like a shift that's happened over time, where it didn't quite occur to me that people will love and connect with me in spite of and regardless of who I am or who I discover myself to be and what that looks like. That just brings me back to courage and discernment, because I really do feel that it takes courage to just do it, to just be who we are and go for the things that we want, despite what we think we're supposed to want or what we think other people would consider, you know, to be great things to want.
Exactly.
It's just
because they're allowed the freedom, knowing that, you know what? You're allowed to, you know what, neighbor? You're allowed to do what you want to do and to live your life the way that you want to live it. And I'm allowed to live mine the way that I want to live mine. That's it.
Exactly.
Just being okay with that.
Exactly.
It reminds me of this, what Michael, like the Iboga provider, what he said, one thing that really helped me, two things, care enough not to care about what other people think. Care enough about yourself to not care. Care not to care. Don't care. Who cares what they think?
I like that.
Because you're not responsible for their energy or their perception of you.
care enough not to care.
Yeah, and that's the thing that's really trippy to think about. It is not our responsibility. It's our responsibility to show up the best way that we can every single day, or to do our best, be the best person that we can be. But past that, if you're living in integrity and doing your best, it doesn't matter what anyone thinks of you.
Exactly. Exactly.
Exactly. And like, it showed me one thing in my journey. It showed me, oh yeah, and I have another quote from the shaman, but one thing that Aboga did show me, what it was like, in lots of documentaries or like podcasts, you'll hear people talking about Aboga, and they say that it's like a video game or something, or it uses symbols to like explain to you.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So like it was one part, and it showed me like, you know, like the female symbol for like a bathroom or whatever.
Yeah.
And those symbols. So it was like, it showed me the entire earth, and every person on earth was like one of those symbols. And mm-hmm. then behind the symbol, it showed like a beam of light going up into the sky. So there was like millions of beams of light all over the earth going up, connecting to their higher selves. Right.
Yeah.
And it was just basically going like, that pillar of energy, that's their responsibility. That's it.
Mm.
You're responsible for your energy, and everyone is themselves. And if that makes sense, if I'm making sense at all right now.
Absolutely makes sense. Can you, I like the picture that was drawn there. So there's the sign, the symbol for the female bathroom, and they're all up in the sky.
Like, yeah, like each person was like an emoji or like a avatar. Mm. It was like everyone, and it was just saying that light, that energy is you, and that's yours, and you are the only one that is in control of that. No one else is in control. No one else can have an effect on you if you don't let them.
Mm.
It somehow was like explaining that to me, like telepathically in my mind.
Right.
Like, and then, okay. And before I forget, the other thing that the shaman said was, those who mind don't matter, and those who matter don't mind.
Exactly.
Like, what you were saying. Those who mind don't matter, dude.
They exactly.
Don't, who cares? Dude, because there is going to be people out there, and there are people out there who will accept you for who you are.
Exactly.
Who will love you and be there for you. And you know, the most important thing of all is you loving yourself and being there for yourself. And you know what? That's blown my mind. It's opened me up. The last 3 years have just like completely changed me as a person in my understanding of that. Loving myself.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to give love to everybody else. But the last person that I was giving it to was me.
Yeah.
And it's like, crazy. It's crazy when you realize that's your power.
Yeah.
That right there, like being able to connect with you and just being like, yo, it's all good. I forgive you, man.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone makes mistakes. And you're just a person just like everyone else.
Yep, exactly.
I guess I'll just like, remember how I think we were talking a while ago about like ayahuasca and like why I even started this journey with my emotions was because when I met my beautiful partner, Corey, he's just an amazing person. And I just knew like, if I didn't like figure out how to truly love myself, then how was I ever going to be able to give him that love that I knew he deserved, just like the type of, you know what I mean? And I was like, dude, if I don't work on myself, if I don't heal this shit, like, I don't want to carry this shit anymore, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, so much has changed since then. We're in a band now, like, working with, like, Pachamama, like, it's completely changed my life. If, like, anyone listens to this and they've never tried, you know, psychedelics, I just hope that like, if you're going through anything, you want to feel better and you want to understand yourself and you want to truly work on yourself, go to therapy and go and try, you know, ayahuasca or mushrooms or, you know, that's
I feel like people who feel called to things like ayahuasca eventually end up end up with her.
Yeah, because she's like, hey, mm-hmm. I see you.
There's definitely a call, a pull.
Yes.
Keeps coming.
You want to hear one crazy story?
Yeah.
Before I ever tried ayahuasca, I was like reading about it and researching. And, you know, before I even tried it, I bought this sweater from Etsy, and it was like a 70s. It was like a vintage sweater from the 70s, and I thought it was really cool, so I ordered it. And in the package, this woman was like really cool. I think she was probably like a old hippie or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she put this card inside of my package, and it was like the only other thing other than the sweater itself was just this blank card, and it had like I still have it. It's a beautiful piece of artwork with like a jaguar, and it's like blue, and then there's like a naked woman, and she's like in the center of it with her hands up, like being like, ah, like, I don't know. It's crazy, and it's really beautiful. And I felt when I got that, there was no explanation, there was no writing on it. And I've always been super connected with different animal spirits, and like felt that intuitively, like anytime that like an animal comes to my life, you like feel that energy of like, oh, this is going to teach me something, like spirit animal.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And man, like that's come to me that like, that's like a jaguar is my, like one of my power animals for me. Mm-hmm. And like what it symbolizes is like transformation and like going to your like dark sides of your personality and your soul, and like transmuting that, and mm-hmm. courage, and like facing like traumas. And I just feel like that's like a small but really cool example of like how the medicine connects with people. When you have like a random, why did this person put a jaguar?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that turned out to be something that has completely, and like jaguar, like that's one of like the main animals like that a lot of people see when you do ayahuasca, as a jaguar, right? Because that's part of the medicine, that it's part of the power of the forest and nature, right? So I feel like, and like little things like that, like seeing the animal everywhere and getting random cards like that, or random messages from seeing jaguar everywhere, like, you know what I mean? Just
that's how
the medicine connects with you. It's synchronicities.
Thank you for sharing that. I feel like listening to you, like all I'm thinking in my head is like, wow, we're like soul sisters. This makes complete sense to me. I feel that like totally, like, well, just you were just talking about this card and the jaguar and transmuting things and transformation. And like, all I'm thinking is just, wow, that's so me. That's so me. Wow.
That's awesome, girl.
That's
really cool. We gotta get jaguar tattoos, man.
Yeah, that's really, really cool. So cool.
And like, I would have dreams about it. And I've been seeing like Black Panther, like a black, totally black jaguar come to me in my like dreams and my like in my meditations too. Mm-hmm. And like,
that's really awesome. That's awesome. Cool. Yeah, it is cool. It's so cool. Well, thank you, thank you, thank you for such an amazing conversation. I really hope that you enjoyed it enough to come back, because I would love to have you on.
I would love to. I hope that my first ever podcast was okay. I hope that I wasn't, that it was all good. I hope that my ramblings were kept to a good length.
I think that was definitely all good. It was so beautiful and synchronistic in so many ways for me. So I'm sure there's at least one other person. Absolutely. I'm sure there's at least one other person out there. At the very least one more that will feel the same way.
Amazing.
It was awesome. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
No problem, girl. Thank you for having me on your podcast. Been a pleasure, and I'm really grateful that you asked me to come, and I hope that we can have many more conversations on this podcast about anything under the sun, because talking with you about anything is fun.
Amazing.
And that was another combination session. That was a double whammy: intuition and psychedelics. And it was so, so good, especially all that storytelling about Iboga and how that's, how all the experiences that she had, they were just so beautiful. They were exactly what I needed to hear. Exactly what I needed to hear. I hope the same goes for you. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you, Kelte. Do check her music out. Her voice is just beautiful. It is just beautiful. Really, truly, check it out. So unique and just so soothing and wonderful to listen to. And also joyful for some reason. It makes me feel joyful. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Lots of love. Check you later.